To a verse today, since we have five personalities to cover today, and it's quite a bit of material on these wonderful Vaishnav personalities, appearance and disappearance days. This gives us a really wonderful opportunity to associate with these great saintly souls and acharyas through hearing about them. Give me some water, I've got a lot of reading to do. This is also Vasanti Panchami, which is the first day of spring. I think it's supposed to be about 80 degrees today, so that's appropriate. We got through our cold weather, and we're definitely into spring now. It's the appearance day of Srimati Vishnupriya Devi, Sri Raghunandana Thakur, Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, and Pundarik Vijayaniti. And it's the disappearance day of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I'll probably spend the majority of the time on Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which is just a personal preference, I guess, because just such an incredibly wonderful devotee who has contributed so much to Vaishnav literature. But these are all very, very important personalities. We'll try to at least touch upon all of them. Okay. Our scriptures emphasize the power of sadhusanga, or saintly association. The Bhagavatam 118.13 says, "The value of a moment's association with a devotee of the Lord cannot be compared even to the attainment of the heavenly planets or liberation from matter. And what to speak of worldly benedictions in the form of material prosperity, which is for those who are meant for death?" In other words, the most important benediction we can get, the highest thing that we can actually attain, is the association of pure saintly devotees. So we are so fortunate that in our Vaishnav line that we have so many great personalities, and we have the appearance and disappearance days which commemorate them. Of course, for us, we celebrate the appearance and the disappearance more or less equally. It's not so much that a disappearance is a day of mourning. In fact, it's a day of celebration, because we know that that great devotee, that pure Vaishnav, has simply left this particular place and gone to another place, probably a much better place in this earthly planet, either back to Godhead or to other preaching work as ordered by the Lord. So it's also interesting that I've noticed that in some of these personalities, like I say Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I don't even know if we have his appearance day on the calendar. And you notice that some of the six Goswamis, we don't have their appearance days. We always have their disappearance days. Because I asked Chaturatma about that. He's kind of an authority, you know, on Vaishnav history, and he studies all of this. And I said, why is that? And he said, because usually they may not have known or really kept that close track of when people were born, but by the time they'd achieved that kind of greatness and they had disciples and everything, by the time they disappeared, you know, it was very well noted. So, in other words, you know when a great Vaishnav disappears, you may not have paid so much attention when they were born back in those days. So, although we do have these appearance days of some of the personalities here. So turning to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I think that one thing that is very wonderful about him and his writing is that he speaks so much about the process of devotional service. He talks about the association of devotees, he talks about offenses, how to clear offenses, he often writes about the powers of the holy name, and so many things, of course, so many topics he covers, and I think his writing is just, it seems particularly appropriate, it seems very relevant to us, even though it's 400 years later, 300 years later. Vishwanath wrote throughout the late 16, early 1700s his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. One of his most important works was completed in 1704. So he's maybe, you know, 100 years or maybe a little bit less, 50 to 100 years after the six Goswamis. He's sort of in this middle period of history when really wasn't a whole lot going on. I mean, a lot of the great personalities, he's like one, two, three generations from Narottam Das Thakur, who was kind of at the end of that era of the Goswamis. He's in the line from Narottam Thakur. So, anyway, he's considered to be a very stalwart Vaishnav who sort of held things together, really kept the Vaishnav line very strongly at that time. I don't know if he's a direct disciple, but he's a Shiksha disciple, Baladev Vijayabhushana. So he's well known in that period as well. Read a little biography from him. Of course, his writing, he's probably most well-known for his commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, but he also wrote many original books as well. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur took his birth in the year, it was somewhere between 1626 and 1638. There's different accounts depending where you read. The majority of biographies I read said 1638 is probably the most correct. And he lived till about 1708. They think it's 1708 is correct. He, as I said, he wrote the Bhagavatam commentary in 1704, so we know he lived at least that long. So he lived probably 70 years till 1708. He was born within the Nadia district of West Bengal, a place called Prasida Devagram. Srila Chakravarti Thakur went on to live in the Murshidabad district of West Bengal in Syedabad, where he received mantra initiation from Radharaman Chakravarti. He lived for a long time in the house of his Guru Dev, where he wrote many books. When Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur lived in Nadia, he closely studied the scriptures, beginning with the study of Sanskrit grammar, poetry, and rhetoric. It is said that even as a boy in school, he was undefeatable as a scholar who could overcome anyone in argument and debate. From an early age, he was indifferent toward family life. For the purpose of binding his son in a contract of family life, Vishwanath's father arranged for his marriage when he was very young. He remained a married man for only a short time. Soon he renounced his wife and home and went to live in Vrindavan. After this, his parents and relatives made many unsuccessful attempts to induce him to return to family life, but Vishwanatha Chakravarti was fixed in his determination to renounce worldly life and surrender himself completely to the service of Krishna. After having come to Vrindavan Dham, Sri Vishwanath took up his residence in the Bhajan Kutir of Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami on the banks of Radhakund, where there lived a disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraj whose name was Mukundadas. There, Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti made a careful study of the Goswami literature. In that holy place, he later wrote many commentaries on the books of the Goswamis. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has written many books, I think there are about 40 altogether, which are the following: commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam, Sartha Darshana Tika, Bhagavad Gita, Sartha Varshani Tika, Alankar Koshtava, Ujvala Nilamana, Ananda Vrindavan Champu, Rupa Goswami's Vigdagda Madhava Natakam, Gopal Tapane Upanishad, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he wrote original works such as Sri Krishna Bhavanamrita Mahakavya. He had a real gift for these names, yeah, titles. Svapna Vilasamrita, Madhurya Kadambini, Stavamala Lahari, and Aishwarya Kadambini. He's also, by the way, the author of Sri Guru Vastakam, the Samsara Dhavana Lila song that we sing every morning for Mangal Arti. He's the author of that song. I don't know other songs he's written, but that's certainly very prominent. The Diksha Guru Parampara of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is given as follows: from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lokanath Goswami, Narottam Das Thakur. As they branched out, probably he was most noted for being in the line directly from Narottam. Narottam Thakur, Ganga Narayan Chakravarti, Krishna Charana Chakravarti, Radharaman Chakravarti. Sometimes, in some biographies, Krishna Charana Chakravarti is given as his spiritual master, but I think he was actually his Param Guru. He sort of was trained and grew up with both of them. Krishna Charana Chakravarti, his disciple Radharaman Chakravarti, who gave Diksha to Vishwanatha Chakravarti. He studied extensively under them when he was in Syedabad before going to Vrindavan, where he met Mukundadas Goswami, a disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and studied the Goswami literature. He disappeared on the Vashant Panchami day in the month of Magh, which must be today. Here's a little bit more. He was known as the crest jewel of the Vaishnavas because of his pure devotion, scholarship, and realized perception of Radha Gokulananda's intimate conjugal pastimes. Gaudiya authorities say that Sri Rupa Goswami is Devavatara, an incarnation of God of speech. And Gaudiya Vaishnavacharyas, especially his direct disciples, believe that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is an incarnation of Sri Rupa Goswami. Well, I don't know that. I shouldn't put that in there. I don't know if that's authoritative or not. Who's saying this exactly? Anyway, he's held in high regard by the Vaishnava community. Among all the Gaudiya Vaishnavacharyas, only Vishwanatha Chakravarti comes close to matching Sri Rupa Goswami's profound realizations on the absolute truth. That I would agree with. Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was the protector, guardian, and acharya during the middle period, 1600 to 1700, of the historical development of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. In a dream, Lord Sri Krishna ordered Vishwanath to make commentaries on the Goswami's books. Immediately he started to write prolifically. Clouds would shield him from the sun whenever he sat to write. Once a torrential downpour flooded the area where Vishwanath was writing his Bhagavatam commentaries. Miraculously, not a drop of water touched Vishwanath or his manuscript. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote over 40 Sanskrit books on the science of pure devotion to Radha Giridhari. He also made the sweetest, most highly realized Rasika Tikas commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and the works of Rupa Goswami, Kavi Karnapur, and Narottam Das Thakur. His samadhi is in the Radha Gokulananda temple courtyard in Vrindavan. I wanted to read some just samples of his writings. I think it gives a little better feel for Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And as you read his commentaries, there's just these gems, these wonderful nuggets of realization just throughout his writings. And we've been very fortunate that I think particularly, you know, our own Bhana Maharaj, who's one of our ISKCON GBC sannyasis, who lives in India, is a Sanskrit scholar, and he's translated into English so many of these works. Of course, many of you are familiar with the Srimad-Bhisartha Darshini. This was, I think, the first one he did, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, but Bhana Maharaj has completed all of Vishwanath's commentaries now up through the 12th canto. And they're very, very wonderful. He's also translated his commentary on Bhagavad Gita. His, along with Jiva Goswami's commentaries on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, those are all in English. And somebody else translated Madhurya Kandambani, a very nice little book on all aspects of devotional service, stages of devotional service. But I don't know, what was that other one of his you lent me once that was translated of Vishwanath? Do you remember? Besides Madhurya Kandambani? Maybe, yeah. You know, what's the Sanskrit title that is? What is it?
Prema?
Premambu? Kamput. Kamput. Okay. So those I know are all, there's probably others, but those have been translated into English recently and are available to read. Okay. Here's from his commentary, one of his commentaries in the third canto. In the association of pure devotees, discussions of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and therefore he is freed, and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. Vishwanath's commentary. Only by association with devotees does the mind develop attraction to the Lord. The stages are described here. The previous verse mentioned that association should be desired, then faith first arises. From excellent, pra is the Sanskrit, association devotees, stories of my pastimes, Krishna's, become nectar for the ears. From inferior association, there is only Vajna Kriya, but the stories do not become nectar. Thus, from excellent association, the stories cause anartha nivritti. Then those stories cause nishta, then ruchi, etc., up to prema. So in other words, one might, by just casual association with devotees, one may take up the process of bhajan, of hearing and chanting, but it's only through advanced association the stage of anartha nivritti comes, when one becomes cleared from one's, you know, past sinful activities, one's offenses, etc. So that advanced association is necessary to advance beyond a certain stage of devotional service. That was a very important point, I thought, that Vishwanath made there. He also talks a lot about offenses to devotees. From the Madhurya Kadambani, he says, the first offense is to criticize and blaspheme the devotees. Blaspheming in this context means to be envious of and antagonistic towards the saintly devotees. Now, what's the effect of offenses? This is from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 121, his commentary. In spite of the fact that bhava or rati has appeared, the obstacles have not completely dissipated. Such persons are therefore classified as sadhakas. There still remains a trace of some serious aparad, because the effects of the aparad are very strong and long-lasting. In this condition, with even a trace of aparad that generates suffering, sadhya bhakti, the perfectional stage, should not appear. So in other words, we can't really reach the perfectional stage until our offenses are cleared, until we're free from offenses. Now, fortunately, of course, he gives us the remedy for offenses. He doesn't just leave us there thinking, oh my gosh, what can I do? I've got these offenses. This is from Madhurya Kadambini. If one even accidentally commits this offense against a Vaishnav, that is the blasphemer devotee, he must bitterly repent of his low behavior. Just as poison is counteracted by poison, similarly the offender, having set aflame his spiritual life in blasphemy, must be purified in the fire of contrition. The offender must go and fall at the feet of the devotee he reviled and beg forgiveness until he is again able to please that Vaishnava. Yet if for some reason he is unable to appease the devotee, then the offender must continue to serve him for many days in a way that will impress him and satisfy him. In case the offense is of such strong and serious nature that a Vaishnava's ire remains unpacified, then the offender must strongly condemn his own abominable action and think, oh, how shameful, I have blasphemed a Vaishnava. With a heavy heart, the operati must then take shelter of the holy name and chant incessantly, knowing this to be his only hope. And of course, throughout, of course, as with all Vaishnavas, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur constantly talks about the powers of the holy name to purify. That's a theme that comes throughout so many of his commentaries. By the purification process of chanting, especially to chant without offense, and talks about the different stages and the non-basa stage of clearing. I didn't write down it specifically, but there's some very, very wonderful commentaries in the sixth canto, the first three chapters, in the story of Ajamil by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. I think those are really worth reading two or three times, where he really talks about the power of the holy name and how the holy name, you know, is above all mundane or material activities, and how one can become purified of all sinful activities through that chanting. So at one point, Vishwanath says that while there are still offenses, one goes through the 14 stages of devotional service. And we know the different stages, starting from, you know, starting from Shraddha going up to Prema. That's, I think it's about 7 or 8 we normally think. He's extended them. He's put some sub-stages in there up to 14 stages. Then he says that the offense, this is, I've said this before, but it's one of my favorites. He says that the offenseless stage of chanting, there's only 2 stages. You chant Hare Krishna and then you go back to Godhead. So, Vishwanath also sometimes was rather humorous. Sometimes there was a certain lightness in his writing. He would say things like that. I couldn't find it, but there's one place he was talking about impersonalism. And it was quite amusing the way he wrote it. He said, sometimes people say that it's very difficult for them to understand the complexities of Mayavadi and personal philosophy. He says, that's because you can't understand it. It doesn't make any sense, you know. And then he goes through and he, you know, takes it apart piece by piece, you know, of why it really is illogical. He says, if you think you can't understand, it's not your defect, it's the philosophy doesn't make any sense. Here's another one, a commentary. We're moving to a little different topic here. This is of course a topic that I have always appreciated, that Vishwanath speaks a lot about, and I think this really speaks to devotees. In several places, Vishwanath talks about the reasons why devotees feel suffering or feel distress, and there's many commentaries he's written on this that seem to really bring this out and make it very, very clear. This is from 10.14.8. Srimad Bhagavatam commentary. A devotee understands that the happiness and distress he undergoes due to performing bhakti and committing aparadhas are special mercy from the Lord. It is like, I don't think I have the right one. This looks like 1088.8 to me. Anyway, it's one of the, I may have the wrong citation. Let me start that again. It is like a father who sometimes makes his child drink milk and sometimes makes him drink bitter neem juice. Sometimes the father embraces and kisses his son, and other times he punishes him. The devotee accepts whatever happens to him as the arrangement of the Lord acting for his benefit. The devotee thinks, certainly the Lord knows what is best for me, even if I don't know. Karma and time have no effect on a devotee, so this is Krishna's personal arrangement for me. Out of his mercy, Krishna sometimes gives me happiness, and sometimes gives me distress. considering how to engage me in his service. And a little continuation of that same theme, sort of a summary of the point of why devotees feel distress. This is from the prayers by personified Vedas, 1087, verse commentary to text 40. So since a devotee becomes free from all karmic reactions by worshiping you, the apparent good and bad events he experiences are not the result of his karma, but rather they are personally arranged by you, Bhavad Uta Subhasubhayor. He's speaking of Krishna. You do this in order to protect the confidentiality of devotion to you, or to avoid uprooting the opinions of the atheists, or to increase the longing of the devotees. Or these apparently auspicious and inauspicious material reactions appear as the results of offenses against your devotees, Vaishnava Parad. You make these experiences appear in such a way that the devotee seems to be suffering the reaction of karma. However, the devotee ignores the apparent good and bad reactions of the work he does only for your pleasure. In other words, if someone praises him, this devotee is merciful, tolerant, and generous, or condemns him, this devotee is greedy, hypocritical, and attached to sense enjoyment. We never hear devotees say things like that. The devotee is not overly concerned about it. At these times, the humble devotee does not pay much attention to the words of any person, be he high or low, with praise or to denounce him. He thinks to himself, if these people mistakenly see good and bad qualities in me, express praise, let them do it. If others see my real qualities of being attached to sense gratification and criticize me, then this is perfectly appropriate. Anyway, it goes on. What's that? That is 1087, personified Vedas, text 40. Yeah. That was a nice one. Okay, here's a real deep one. This is in 1014, Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna. And he's talking here about the self. And what is the self, and why, why our ultimate love is for Krishna? This is a 1014 text 55. The verse is, "You should know Krishna to be the original soul of all living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his internal potency." Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, this verse established the conclusion of the discussion. When one sees the truth, he realizes that the individual spirit soul is only an intermediate object of love. The final, highest object of love is Sri Krishna alone. Brahma said, Krishna is the soul of the universe and the super soul present in the hearts of all conditioned souls. A person loves children and other persons because they bring pleasure to his own material body. In the same way, a person loves his own material body because it brings pleasure to himself, the spirit soul. Also in the same way, a person loves his true self, his spiritual identity, because he brings pleasure to the super soul. The super soul is Sri Krishna, whose spiritual form is perfect and complete. The conclusion is that because Krishna is the highest object of love, the greatest love is felt for him. Thus the Vrajagopis love Krishna even more than they love their own sons. So that was an explanation of why when Krishna expanded as the sons of the cows and the cowherd women, that they experienced this even greater love for Krishna, the greatest love for Krishna. Anyway, I'm not sure if I totally understand that, but it's really very thought-provoking. All right, those are, that's enough. Those are some different ideas, just sort of samples of his writings, and of course there are many, many, many others, very illuminating commentaries on our scriptures, and it seems to me that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is able to take the philosophical principles and show how do we apply these in the process of devotional service. And of course, following in that mood, of course, Srila Prabhupada was most expert at this. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada's purports and commentaries, you know, always told us, how do we apply this philosophy? What does this mean to us? How do we enact devotional service given these philosophical principles? And of course, Srila Prabhupada did follow in the footsteps of the Acharyas. When Srila Prabhupada was writing his Srimad Bhagavatam commentaries, his own commentaries, he had usually right beside him the commentaries of Madhvacharya, Sanatan Goswami, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Who are the others that he used? Sridhar Swami? One other one, I think. Baladevi? Okay. So those five commentaries, particularly Vaishnava commentaries, Srila Prabhupada utilized them, because that's the process. The process of devotional service is we follow in the footsteps of the Acharyas. In fact, you remember that one story when one of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disciples was writing a commentary, but he didn't refer to Sridhar Swami's commentary on the... who was the first? The first commentary was Sridhar Swami. But because he didn't refer to him, Lord Chaitanya was unhappy, and he rejected his writing. He said, how can you jump over the Acharya? So in the same way, this wonderful line of Acharyas we have illuminates the Vaishnav line and Vaishnav writings even today. And we see, especially as we've been in the 10th canto, the commentaries written by the disciple of Srila Prabhupada in his Rasadansa, these five chapters we're reading, you notice that almost every purport starts with according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So they've extensively used his purports. In fact, there are some of the Bhagavatam purports in our BBT edition that are lifted verbatim, practically, from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purport. Because he's, as it was stated, he's known particularly in the Vaishnava circles for his 10th canto commentary as being one of the best and most illuminating, and everybody benefits from that. And Srila Prabhupada did specifically mention, I read in one writing I was checking, Prabhupada said that we should read the commentaries of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, particularly his 10th canto commentaries. So Srila Prabhupada very much approved of his writing. Right. Okay. I'm going to move on to some of our other personalities. Any comments or additional thoughts on Vishwanath before we go on? Yes. Say it again.
Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, that word. Prabhupada took it so seriously of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur commentary. Then when he heard from his guru in his family life, when he had a dream of avoid take sannyas, and he was very disturbed and very scared. But that Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, he says that gave him the strength that the following the instruction of guru is everything. Otherwise, confusing what to do, what not to do. Should I take sannyas? How will family? It's like very disturbing. Mm. But then instruction of guru is backbone of spiritual life. He took it very seriously. Also, another one, I don't know, maybe I'll try to make it very quick. That where this, you have mentioned very nicely that his song that we sing in every ISKCON center, Sangsara Dava Nala Lita Loka. There is a nice explanation given when he composed that. That Srila Prabhupada gives in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila that Srila Krishna Das Srila Jiva Goswami Pad was accused by three, according to Prabhupada in the purport, by the Sahajiyas, three accusations. One was that he did not promote Parakya, he only promoted Sakya, mm-hmm. according to Prabhupada. So then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was the next Acharya who actually faced this. And there was a group of Vaishnavas in Vrindavan that are not advanced, so they wanted to actually literally eliminate Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's existence. So right after Mangalarti, they arranged a platform where they knew the route he would take every day from Gokulananda temple to his Bhajan Kuti. And then in that route, they made a plan to kill him. And then as they...
To kill Huji?
Vishwanath.
Oh. Because he contradicted Jiva Goswami's commentary.
Right.
Yeah.
Because Jiva Goswami, now Prabhupada gave a very nice also. Jiva Goswami promoted Sakya also because most of one group of his disciples were so neophyte that they will not understand this paramount pastime. So he says, yes, Radha Krishna's are married, so don't worry, just worship like that. So then as they entered in the forest, it was kind of like a Mangalarti time. So they lost track of him, and they found a beautiful little girl plucking flower. And they are also Vaishnava, but new fight. Then they were surprised in the middle of the forest how this girl came. So he says, "Did you see the old man?" He was an old man at that time. He walked by this side. And when this girl spoke sweetly, "Oh, I don't know. I'm just plucking flower for Swamini, Radharani. So I haven't seen any." So that when she spoke, it was such an attractive force that they bowed down. They thought something mystic about this girl, how in the forest it will come, she will come. So as they were bowing down, they got up, they saw this girl transform into that old man, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. And then he came back and he composed this song, Saradavana. Then all the Vaishnava accepted him as the guru of guiding Shiksha Guru.
Thank you. That's a wonderful story. Yeah. And the philosophical disagreement was, of course, in Vishwanath's commentaries, he talks about the Parakiya Rasa as being the highest in the unmarried women. Of course, Jiva Goswami, in his commentary on the 10th canto, he was more on the side towards that they were actually married, Krishna Gopis. In fact, I haven't got a chance to read it. Bhano Swami has just completed Jiva Goswami's 10th canto commentaries also, translated into English. And he told me there's like a 30-page purport to one of the verses where Jiva Goswami explains that, his side of it, you know, where he does that. But he reconciles it all so nicely that you could actually see that both sides are correct, depending upon your, you know, just different points of view. It's not that you might think, how do these great pure devotees, I mean, these are all basically Manjari gopis we're talking about. We're talking about Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. These are, you know, personalities at the absolute highest level, you know. But, you know, there are different perspectives and different ways of looking, and that's all part of some rasa that's probably beyond our understanding. So, you know, some apparent contradictions, but kind of adds to the flavor and spice of Vaishnava philosophy. Okay, thank you. Okay, it's also the appearance day of Raghunanda Thakur. I don't know too much about him. I'm sure there's things out there, but in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's mentioned as the 39th branch of the tree of the spiritual descendants of Lord Chaitanya. His father was Mukunda, and one small story that's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is once his father was Mukunda, Lord Chaitanya asked Mukunda if Raghunandana was his father or his son. And Mukunda replied that actually that Raghunandana was his father because he was his spiritual teacher, even though he was physically his son. So obviously a very, very great advanced devotee. Of course, Vishnu Priya is the second wife of Lord Chaitanya. She's the goddess of fortune and incarnation of Lakshmi. But she was briefly married to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I think she was only 16 years old, is that correct, when he took sannyas? Because he was 24. So very, very, very briefly married to Lord Chaitanya. The girl is 16 years old. He leaves her. She becomes, civilly a widow when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes sannyas. But of course we know that she is actually eternally united, you know, with Vishnu, with Narayan, and there's no separation from the spiritual perspective. And those stories can be found in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Mangala, etc. Okay, Raghunath Das is one of the six Goswamis, a very important personality. I'll read a little bit about him. Sri Raghunath Das took his birth in the village of Sri Krishnapur in the district of Hooghly. He was born in the Shaka era of 1428 and left the world in the Shaka era of 1504 on the 12th day of the bright four night in the month of Ashvini. I don't know what the years translate to. They're usually about 50 years earlier, aren't they? Then, what? What's 70? Okay, 76. So he would have been born what? Close to around 1500 and lived till late into the late 1500s. Yeah, that makes sense because he would have been a little bit younger than Lord Chaitanya. In his childhood, Sri Raghunath Das studied at the house of the priest Acharya Sri Balaram Das. Of his priest, Acharya Sri Balaram Das. Haridas Thakur was very merciful to Balaram Das and occasionally visited his house. At these times, Raghunath Das had the good fortune of relishing Thakur Haridas's association and listened to philosophical discourses from him. Sri Raghunath Das was the only son in the family of Hiranyan and Govardhan, and there was no limit to the care and the affection that was showered upon him. Though he was brought up to be just like the son of a king by the powerful influence of saintly devotees, he realized at a very young age the material existence is temporary, and a mood of detachment toward wealth, parents, and relatives began to grow within him. Upon hearing the glories of Sri Gauranga Nityananda, he became extremely eager to have darshan of their lotus feet. When he heard that Sri Gaurasundara had taken sannyas and was leaving Nadia forever, he rushed madly to the home of Advaitacharya in Shantipur to meet the Lord. Seeing Raghunath fall at his feet, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could understand that this was his dear, most eternal associate, and he embraced Raghunath firmly. Crying, Sri Raghunath appealed to the Lord, "I will also go with you." But the Lord replied that he would not take him along at this time. Yet upon his return to Vrindavan, Raghunath should, under any pretext, come to Nilachala to see him. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anchalila 6th chapter, there's the narration of how Sri Raghunath Das was arrested by the Nabs men and his subsequent release from the bondage of family life. In that chapter, there's also a description of the Panihati festival, as well as Raghunath's pastimes in Jagannath Puri with Sri Gaurasundara. Those are long pastimes that I don't have time to read, but as you know, that he wanted to renounce and go and join Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and of course his family was very much opposed to this. They were very wealthy people, and he was extremely rich, and they wanted to keep him in that situation. So he had to, actually had to have a plan to escape. He actually had to, like, in the middle dead of night, you know, run from his house, escape from his house, so that he could go and join Lord Chaitanya. And of course, there's a famous story in the Panihati festival where Lord Nityananda was there at Panihati, and, well, it wasn't at the Panihati festival. He put on the first Panihati festival, and Lord Nityananda saw him and told him to come over, and he offered obeisances, and he asked him to put on a big festival. He was extremely wealthy. This was, like, no problem for him. So he had all the merchants and everything buy all the ingredients, and they had the chipped rice festival. And that's, of course, the beginning of the Panihati festivals that continue to this day, and, of course, are replicated in Atlanta every year in June. Many of you have gone to that. Okay. Sri Raghunath used to reside at... He went to Vrindavan. Sri Raghunath used to reside at Sri Radhakund. At that time, Radhakund had not yet been excavated, though Raghunath often meditated upon how to beautify the kund. Once a wealthy merchant walked the long, difficult road to Sri Bhadrakashram. That's, of course, at about 10,000 feet elevation in the Himalayas. With great devotion, he worshipped Sri Badrinarayan and offered a large portion of his wealth in charity. That night, Badrinarayan appeared to him in a dream and said, "You should go to a village near Vrajan named Aritgram, where you will find my devotee, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami. To him you should deliver all your wealth. If he refuses to accept it, tell him I sent it to you and remind him about restoring Radhakund." The merchant happily returned to his home and then went on to Raja, where he met Sri Raghunath and explained everything to him. Astonished, Raghunath gave him permission to restore both Radhakund and Shyamakund. Raghunath Das Goswami was always engaged in worshipping Sri Radha Govinda within his mind. One day in his meditation, he prepared and offered sweet rice to Sri Radha and Krishna. In great happiness, they and the gopis ate the sweet rice, and he accepted their remnants. While he was honoring the Lord's prasadam, he was filled with intense love and ate slightly more than what he was accustomed to. The next day, from morning to late afternoon, his door remained closed, causing the devotees some concern. After they knocked repeatedly on his door, it finally opened and they saw him lying down. "My health is not good," he explained to Sridas. The devotees were unhappy and immediately sent word to Sanatan Goswami in Mathura. Upon hearing the news, Balabhacharya's son, Sri Vittal, sent two doctors to see Raghunath Das at Radhakund. Seeing his condition, the physicians insisted that Raghunath's illness was the result of eating too much sweet rice. The devotees were dumbfounded by such a suggestion, but eventually understood the mystery. The worship of Raghunath Das Goswami was wonderful. Kavi Karnapur has written in the Gura Gopidishtipika that Sri Raghunath was Rasa Manjari in Krishna Lila. According to some other persons, he was Rati Manjari or Banumati. Raghunath Das wrote many books such as Stavavali, Stavavali, Dhanacharita, Muktacharita, etc. Okay. And last one we have today is Pundarik Vijayaniti. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 10:14, says Pundarik Vijayaniti was the third big branch, was so dear to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that in his absence, Lord Chaitanya himself would sometimes cry. So, it says in the Gauri Ganudesh Deepika, Srila Pundarik Vijayaniti is described as the father of Srimati Radharani in Krishna Leela. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore treated him as his father. Pundarik Vijayaniti's father was known as Baneshvara, or according to other opinions, Shukalambara Brahmacharya, and his mother's name was Gangadevi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called Pundarik Vijayaniti father, and he gave him the title Premaniti. Pundarik Vijayaniti later became the spiritual master of Gadadhar Pandit and an intimate friend of Swarup Damodar's. Gadadhar Pandit first misunderstood Pundarik Vijayaniti to be an ordinary pounds and shillings man, but later upon being corrected, he became his disciple. I'll read about that one. Another incident in the life of Pundarik Vijayaniti involves his criticizing the priest of the Jagannath Temple, for which Jagannath Prabhu chastised him personally by slapping his cheeks. This is described in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Anchalila, Chapter 7. So here's a little pastime from Chaitanya Bhagavat about Pundarik Vijayaniti and Gadadhar Pandit. After hearing the wonderful qualities of Gadadhar Pandit, Vijayaniti was very pleased to meet him. The great personality, Sri Pundarik Vijayaniti, sat like a prince, and there's a long description of the great opulence that he manifested, the servants and all kinds of, wonderful service to him. As he followed the life of pure devotional service, he looked as charming as Cupid himself. Those who did not know him would consider him a prince, as everything around him gave the impression that he was a man with an easy and comfortable life given to pleasure. When Gadadhar Pandit saw these luxurious items and general atmosphere of materialistic life, he became suspicious. Since Gadadhar was a fully renounced soul from his early childhood, naturally some doubts regarding the character of Pundarik Vijayaniti entered his heart. He thought, what sort of Vaishnav is he, surrounded by so much finery and lavish living? Hearing about his devotional mood, I developed great respect for this person, but now upon seeing him, it is slowly giving way to doubt and suspicion. Mukunda understood the mind and heart of Gadadhar Pandit. Thus he took it upon himself to reveal the true nature of Pundarik Vijayaniti. By the special mercy of the Lord Krishna, Gadadhar Pandit would be allowed to perceive everything. Nothing would remain unknown to him. In a very sweet voice, Mukunda began to sing a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam describing the glories of devotional service. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who has granted the position of mother to the she-demon Putana? Putana was unfaithful and always hankering for the blood of human children. With that desire in mind, she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast and came to kill Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement. As soon as these words concerning devotional service entered his ears, Pundarik Vijayaniti began to weep. Tears of ecstatic love welled up in his eyes, rolling down his face profusely like streams of the Ganga. Simultaneously, all the symptoms of ecstasy manifested on his person. He wept, trembled, rolled, horripilated, roared, and finally fell into an unconscious state of ecstasy. Who knows what horripilated means? Goosebumps, yeah. It just means you have goosebumps. Strange word. Then suddenly, regaining consciousness, he said in a loud voice, "Speak, speak," and again fell down to the ground. He cried out, "O Krishna, O Lord, my soul, my very life, you have made me hard-hearted like a stone." He lamented loudly, piteously crying out, "I have been deprived of the Lord's association and his most merciful incarnation." He rolled around and crashed down to the ground. Everyone was afraid he might break his bones. He lay down without breathing, totally submerged in an ocean of spiritual ecstasy. Amazed at what he had witnessed, Gadadhar Pandit began to worry, thinking, "What inauspiciousness has overcome me and made me think in such an offensive manner to this great personality? It'd be difficult to find another pure Vaishnava like him anywhere in this entire creation." One man One can become totally purified simply by observing his devotional attitude. Yet today, I've been offensive, and the extent of my offense can only be mitigated by your mercy. You must be merciful to me and purify my heart. All the devotees who have surrendered to the Lord by the process of devotional service have accepted the shelter instructions of a guide. Yet I do not have such an instructor. So I have decided to take shelter of Pundarik Vijayaniti and follow devotional service under his guidance. I shall counteract all my offenses to him by becoming his disciple. Pundarik Vijayaniti smiled and said, "Be assured, I will do as you request. For by the Lord's mercy, it was my great fortune to meet a person who is like a precious gem. Such a disciple may be found only as the result of many lifetimes of pious activity. The forthcoming 12th day of the waxing moon is very auspicious. Meet me here then, and your plan will become successful." Overjoyed, Gadadhar Pandit offered his obeisances and took leave of Pundarik Vijayaniti. Mukunda and Gadadhar went straight to meet Lord Gauranga, who happily received the news of Pundarik Vijayaniti's arrival. Okay. So, I think we've covered a little bit about most of the personalities today, and we're pretty much out of time, so we should probably stop at this point. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. All glories to Srimati Vishnupriya Devi, Sri Raghunath Nanda Thakur, Raghunath Das Goswami, Pundarik Vijayaniti, and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur.